Okay, ladies, I know you're out there, even though we can't hear you. So we are really excited. We want to thank you for joining us tonight for this teleconference call on what women who have lifelong romances do that other women don't. And before we begin, I'd just like to take the opportunity to introduce myself and tell you a little bit about who I am. My name is Gladys Diaz, and I am with Hearts Desire International, a company here in Miami, Florida, that is completely committed to offering transformational relationship workshops, coaching, and other products and services to women who are single, girlfriends, or married. And we are absolutely thrilled to be partnering with Laura Doyle, who really is the inspiration for the work that we do. We've learned everything we know from her, and we're so grateful to her. And we're really excited to be able to offer this teleconference and also to partner with her for an extraordinary event that is going to be taking place June 22nd through the 24th in Miami, Florida. And that's the Lifelong Mastery Weekend. We are talking about 3 days of just women coming together, looking into our hearts, and really getting in touch with the power that we have, not only to dream of, but to create and actually manifest the relationships that we've always wanted. Relationships that are full of passion, of intimacy, of romance, of fun and laughter. And that's what we're going to be doing for 3 days. So you can imagine, it's just going to be a wonderful event. And not only that, but at that conference, Laura and I are going to be revealing the new Certified Trainer Program. So if you are someone who's thought about or you're interested in becoming a Certified Surrendered Wife or Surrendered Single Trainer, you really want to learn more about how you can take this work that's made such a difference in hundreds of thousands of women's lives and just take it into your families, to your jobs, to your places of worship, and really offer women the gift of discovering how to have this type of lifelong romance, you're going to want to be at this weekend. You're going to want to be at the Lifelong Mastery Weekend because, first of all, you're going to be infused and totally immersed in the work. And then you can see if this is something, a business opportunity that you'd like to take advantage of, whether you want to do it full-time or you want to do it in addition to your job, or you're just really, it's a ministry for you, and you just want to take this work out into the world. So you're definitely going to want to be part of that Lifelong Mastery Retreat, and Laura's going to be talking more about it later. So why are we doing this? Why are we doing this, this teleconference, these two sessions? Well, you know, Laura, Heart's Desire, we are completely committed to, we're on a mission to transform this world, one woman and one relationship at a time. And we can't do it with 4 people. So Laura's goal is to have 1,000 trainers out there sharing the work. And we can only do that with women who are actually living the principles. So the things we're going to be talking about tonight, the habits that Laura's going to be sharing with you, it's not just theory. It's not just something that sounds good. This is what we live. We live it every day, and because we live it every day, we get to experience the benefits of it every single day in our marriages. So I also want to, you know, invite you that as you listen to this call that you take notes, have your pencils and paper ready, and open your heart. Really listen from a place of no matter where you are in your relationship, whether you are feeling that you're single and you haven't found someone, or you're in a relationship that's not exactly what you would like it to be like, we really invite you to listen from the place of possibility, that this type of romance is not only possible, but it's what you deserve. It's what you were born to experience. At the end of the call, we're going to be taking your questions. So if you'd like to ask them aloud, you're free to. If you prefer to send them in writing, you can send them to my email address. I'm going to be checking my email periodically throughout the call, and that is GLAD, G-L-A-D, the number 1@live.com. GLAD, 1@live, LIVE.com. And I'll try to remind you about that later on. But I don't want to talk anymore because I'm so excited to hear what Laura has to share with you tonight. And so for those of you who don't know, Laura Doyle is the New York Times bestselling author of The Surrendered Wife and The Surrendered Single. She's a woman who has dedicated her life and really made her life an open book in order to really make the things that we're going to be talking about today available. It doesn't have to be a secret anymore how you can have a wonderful relationship. And She's about to open up her heart and maybe share with us the habits that we should avoid and the ones that we want to begin practicing in order to create a lifelong romance. So without any further ado, Laura Doyle.
Wow, thank you, Gladys. What a great introduction. I'm so thrilled to be working with you and working with Heart's Desire to get these embarrassing stories out that I'm about to tell you. As promised, I am going to be telling you some sad but true stories of things I said and did from when I very first met my husband, during the courtship, during the engagement, the early marriage, and also I'm going to be telling you about what it's like now. And the reason I'm telling you about this is not so much because I'm so fascinating, although I do think some of the stories are kind of like a train wreck where you just can't look away, but because in each one of these stories, there's an illustration of a habit that was either contributing to the intimacy or it was completely squashing the intimacy. And you'll see it immediately when you hear these examples.
So, you know, you just finished saying, Laura, that you really, and you've shared with me before, that you really didn't have great relationship skills when you met your husband, John, and yet you still managed somehow to form a relationship with him. You know, how did that happen?
Well, the first time I spoke to John was almost 24 years ago, and it was outside of my front door, which was right next to his front door. And I was wearing a dress because I was just back from going to the symphony with a friend. And we were both walking to our doors at the same time, so I smiled at him, and he said hello and introduced himself. And during the conversation, he told me he sometimes acts in community theater plays. And I said, well, let me know the next time you're in one, because I love to go to plays. And he asked me if I wanted to go see a play Friday night right there. And I said, well, that sounds fun. Thank you. So how did I do that? I didn't have any relationship skills yet. But one of the things that naturally happened on this day, even though I didn't have any skills, is that I was feminine, and he was attracted to me. And that happens naturally, and all I had to do was not get in the way. So the thing that I did here that women with lifelong romance routinely do is that I took a feminine approach by attracting rather than pursuing a man. You know, if you're taking notes, this is the first habit, and it serves you well not just in dating, but when you've been married for years, it really serves you well to take a feminine approach. You know, what did I do to put the odds in favor of creating lasting romance that night? I appeared feminine. I was wearing a dress. I like to say, you know, I like to encourage women to flirt in a skirt. I did not ask him on a date. He didn't give me a chance, fortunately. You know, I possibly even asked him to ask me out, right, by saying, well, I love to go to plays. I kind of lobbed him a softball. All he had to do was hit it back. At the very least, I appeared receptive, which is also a very feminine quality. You know, I had, you know, left my house that day. I had dressed up, and I was not expecting, but on some level, I'm sure I was hoping that I was going to meet the guy who's right for me. You know, somewhere inside, I had the faith that that could happen. I was also listening to him in our conversation. I stayed present.
Okay, so the first habit, I already wrote it down, is to take a feminine approach so that you're attracting rather than pursuing. I think that's beautiful. And it sounds like you did a great job of looking and being feminine, and as you said, that was probably very attractive to him. So it doesn't sound like you really did much to sabotage yourself so far.
Well, no, nothing yet, but please stay tuned. You know, he didn't give me a chance. And I know at this time, I was in college, and I was very much into pursuing guys and asking them out because I thought that was equality. But I just didn't get a chance to do that here. He was already interested in me, so it just wasn't necessary for me to pursue him. All I did in that situation was attract him.
And attracted he was. So that first encounter, you know, outside your doorsteps led to a first date. So tell us about how that first date went.
Well, before I went out with John, my therapist actually suggested that I might consider being quiet on the first date. And I was really excited, and I was nervous, which makes me talk more. And I decided to go along with this suggestion. And I noticed it was hard to do. I really wanted to talk. But the more I was quiet, the more I noticed he was trying to make me laugh. And he didn't even care if he looked bad while he was trying to make me laugh, as long as I seemed delighted. I noticed his humility, which was attractive, and also his playfulness. Those are two qualities that I liked then and I still like now. I tried to offer him money for my ticket that night, but he rejected that, so I thanked him for treating me. And I let him pick me up since we lived right next door, and I let him open the car door for me. And also, not insignificant, I didn't have any alcohol that night. Now, at the end of the night, I sat in the car long enough for him to kiss me instead of just jumping out before he had a chance. And I did not suggest that he come inside or come upstairs. No clothing was removed, even though we made out in the car. So the things that I did that coincide with the habits that women with lifelong romance do all the time were being receptive and staying present for the intimacy, which is thrilling and also excruciating at the same time. I didn't do it perfectly, you know. For instance, I did try to pay my own way instead of just being receptive and grateful that he was taking me out. But at least I didn't insist, and I was receptive in other ways, and I was listening to him, which made it possible for us to connect, and we did. So what did I do to put the odds of creating lasting romance in my favor that night? Well, I stayed with myself, and I noticed how I felt when I was with him. I felt attracted and delighted. I let him impress me. I let him buy for me. I let him kiss me. I let him pick me up and open doors. I stayed sober in every sense of the word. There was no alcohol, and there was no sex, which is also a mind-altering experience.
Okay, so, you know, definitely I can tell that there was an attraction there. You know, you were both very attracted to each other, and you've mentioned twice that you didn't have sex with him that night. So I want to ask you, you know, why did you choose not to have sex with him that night?
Well, I was so nervous that I thought I might fly off the planet that night. So although I did have a great time and I was attracted to him, I was ready for the date to end so I could go in my room and scream and hit the bed. You know, I said goodnight, and then I collapsed in a nervous heap once I was behind closed doors. And I guess, looking back, I just wasn't ready to be sexual with him. And fortunately, I honored that.
That's really great. So, you know, except for trying to pay your own way, you know, it sounds like you were being really feminine. We should probably talk about that at another teleconference, why that, you know, is not a good idea. But, you know, it sounds like you were really being feminine and being very receptive, being very present. So you were doing pretty well so far, you know, in allowing the intimacy or at least the relationship to develop with John.
Yeah, so far so good. But, you know, on our second date, we went for a walk. And I thought we should probably hold hands because we had already kissed. And everyone knows that holding hands is supposed to come before kissing, or that's what I thought. Yeah, so, you know, I grabbed his hand as we walked, and he clearly did not like that. His hand went limp, and he seemed to be trying to get away. And frankly, I felt a little rejected, more than a little. I felt pretty rejected. It really kind of stung. So instead of having confidence that the relationship would progress, you know, I think I just wanted to control the pace.
Yeah, it sounds like you were, you know, were you nervous? Were you nervous that maybe things were not going to go the way you wanted or as quickly as you wanted them to?
I was nervous. You know, I decided to make them go the way I wanted them to go, obviously, because I just didn't think they were going to, or they weren't going to do it fast enough. So at the time, I didn't have the confidence that he would just want to hold my hand eventually. So I just tried to grab his. But what I really wanted was to feel desired, you know, to know that he wanted to hold my hand. And I was never going to get that from holding his hand first. But, you know, I mean, a woman with lifelong romance, typically she lets him set the pace of the relationship. And she enjoys each phase of it, right? There's the intrigue is thrilling, dating, kissing, courtship, becoming exclusive, getting engaged, getting married. They are all glorious phases. So what's the rush?
Such a great point. Such a great point. They really are to be experienced, I think. So the third habit, for those of you taking notes, toward creating a lifelong romance is to let him set the pace of the relationship. So because it sounds like when you tried to take matters into your own hands, it kind of backfired, and you said you felt pretty rejected. I think I wrote that down because I think a lot of women at this point would have taken that limp hand to mean that John wasn't interested at all. So I'm interested to know, why did you decide to go out with him again, even though you felt that way, didn't hold your hand back?
Well, because he was cute. So I wanted to see him again. I mean, you know, after that, I made him brunch, and he sent me a thank you note. I read it, and I had this reaction to it, that maybe there was something wrong with him, that he would write me a thank you note. You know, I decided, he's kind of wimpy, or maybe on some level I just thought that someone who liked me so much might have something wrong with him. I don't know. My roommate, Candace, set me straight. You know, I was telling her, do you think that's kind of wimpy? And she's like, no, that's not wimpy. That's very sweet. And so I said nothing to him, but I sort of adjusted my glasses that I was looking at him through. And this, it turns out, is something that women with lifelong romance are in the habit of doing. They see their husband's positive qualities prominently. In fact, there was a study that came out a few months ago about how couples with good marriages tend to think that their spouse is funnier than average, better looking than average, more thoughtful than average. So habit number 4, for those of you who are taking notes, is seeing your man's good qualities more prominently. Like you're looking through rose-colored glasses. That's okay to do. If you're always affirming to you both how great your husband is, how wise, how hardworking, how thoughtful, how romantic, then guess how he's going to show up? You know, I call this spouse-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, Laura, I'm so glad that you had your roommate there to set you straight, you know, because it really was such a gesture on John's part. And I'm sure there's many women on this call who would love to get a thank you note for, you know, for making brunch for someone. So that was really, I'm really glad that she was there and that you listened, you know, that you were willing to listen. So you started looking at John through rose-colored glasses, but, you know, he wasn't your boyfriend yet, or your husband, so... At that point, shouldn't you have been, like, trying to get to know him, to judge his character, to see if you could decide whether he was a good guy and if he was the right guy for you?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, it's not beneficial to overlook someone's good qualities, like that he's thoughtful enough to send a thank you note in favor of finding fault in his actions because I didn't feel worthy of receiving a thank you note. You know, my decision was to receive his gratitude, even though it made me a little uncomfortable. And that served me well with fostering the intimacy in this budding relationship, which continued along and really was so thrilling at this point. You know, we went on another date, on a day trip to San Francisco, which was about an hour from where we lived at the time. And he asked if I wanted to get a hotel so we could stay overnight. Now, my first thought was, well, I can't afford to pay my half of a hotel room. And remember, I'm all about being, you know, egalitarian at this time. So I said, no, you know, I better not. And I didn't really say why. I actually didn't want him to know I couldn't afford it. Of course, that wasn't what he was asking at all. He was saying, do you want to have sex? And I'm sure I would have had sex with him if I'd understood the question, but, you know, I didn't. Because I believe that men and women were the same, and I could have casual sex for the fun of it, just like a man, without putting myself at inordinate risk for heartbreak. That's what I believed at the time. You know, but since I was in college on such a tight budget and I couldn't be egalitarian about it, I turned him down. And when I did, I unwittingly did what women with lifelong romances do. I reserved sex for a committed relationship.
So, again, with sex. So,
yeah.
So why do you... It's important, you know, because, you know, we do have a bunch of women on this call. And so why is it so important to reserve sex until you're in an exclusive, committed relationship?
Well, oxytocin is one good reason. You know, women and men are just very different physiologically when it comes to sex. We women release oxytocin in massive quantities, and it's a bonding chemical that you also release when you have a baby. So men release some too. But it's this really tiny fraction of what women release. We release thousands of times more than men do when we have sex. It's a mind-altering substance. And once you are under the influence of oxytocin, your body wants that relationship to work out no matter what, even if the guy is not a good guy. Even if he's Charlie Sheen, right? You lose your judgment. You lose your ability to judge his character, and now your body is committed. But there are other problems, too. You know, I mean, for example, what if you're having sex with a guy who isn't exclusive with you, and he's also having sex with other women? So now you're part of a harem? I mean, is that what any of us wants? I don't think so. You're also at risk for disease. You know, it's just not enough to assume that because you're sexual, you're the only girl he's seeing. This needs to be a conversation.
Okay, so when do you bring the conversation up, you know, that you want to be exclusive, so before you have sex?
Well, when he's trying to be physically intimate with you, you can let him know that you wouldn't be comfortable having sex unless you were in an exclusive relationship.
So then I shouldn't have done what I did when I just brought it up, you know, before my husband and I even went on the first date. Okay.
Oh, yeah. So nobody asked you and you just decided to volunteer that information, Gladys? Is that right?
Well, yes. I was going to be in control of that situation.
I see.
In a way.
I mean, wouldn't it be nice if all you had to do was say so at the beginning and then that made it so? But obviously this is something we have to enforce. We're the gatekeepers with sex. So it's really not enough to just give it lip service. We have to kind of back that up in the heat of the moment.
Yes, in the heat of the moment. So if I'm talking to a guy, you know, we're starting to see each other. There's definitely this chemistry. We're very attracted to each other. There's making out going on. So wouldn't some men just say, you know, when I say, you know, I want to wait until I'm in an exclusive relationship before I have sex, wouldn't some of them just say, okay, let's be exclusive, you know, just to get in my bed?
Well, if you're with a good guy, he won't say it unless he means it. And that's a big difference, because once he's your boyfriend and you have sex with him, at least you're not becoming part of a harem or risking your heart getting broken by someone who isn't even willing to be in a committed relationship. You know, I mean, some women will want to wait even longer until they're engaged, until they're married, and I absolutely support them doing that. A good guy will wait.
So is this how you and John became exclusive, talking about, you know, that you wanted to wait until you were in an exclusive relationship before having sex?
Well, actually, you know, it was over laundry.
Oh.
I was helping him with it because we just wanted to be together all the time. And he needed to do his laundry, so I was helping him. And he said, well, since you're helping me with my laundry, does that mean I'm your boyfriend now? And I kind of smiled. And I said, yeah, I guess it does. And he said, well, good. Because he said he didn't want to see anybody else. And then I said, well, I don't either. So then we were exclusive.
Oh. So it sounds like, you know, what's great is you're talking about laundry, right? So it doesn't sound like you had an agenda at that point that he should commit to you. There was a, you know, a time frame by when he should have been committed to you. You just pretty much let it happen. So why was that?
Well, it's true. I didn't have an agenda, Gladys, but I did have big, happy butterflies in my stomach when he said that, because it was just spontaneous, and I didn't do anything to make it happen. It was really exciting, because I knew he meant that he really liked me, and I really felt desired and special. And the reason that I didn't have an agenda that he commit to me was because I just didn't think it was that important to have a committed relationship at the time. I also thought that it was a bad idea to get married because my parents had had a really unhappy marriage and divorce. So it's not that I was so, you know, zen-like about it. It's just that I didn't think it was something I wanted until he said that, of course, and then I realized I wanted it with all my heart. And women with lifelong romances also let go of their agendas, even if they realize that they want to have a boyfriend and a husband, because they wouldn't want to be the ones to say, are you seeing anyone else? Or when are you going to be taking your profile off of Match.com? You know, they would rather wait for the giant happy butterflies. It's much more romantic.
But it's true. It really is more romantic. That was such a sweet surprise. So, you know, you mentioned that you didn't have, you know, great modeling from your parents or even someone to show you the skills to nurture the you know, a romance, but it really does sound like you're doing pretty well so far, at least in this point, you know, the relationship.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, it's really kind of amazing that with my lack of relationship skills, you know, they're still not biting me in the butt here. But, you know, just wait, Gladys. They will start being a drag on everything right about now. You know, I mean, a few months after we become exclusive, yeah, I decided it was time to ditch the roommates and move in together. So I told John that's what we should do. And he was visibly uncomfortable. He was super reluctant. But I just steamrolled over him, and I found a house for us to rent. And I told him he had to give notice. And I told him, he was concerned about what his very traditional Catholic mother would think. And I said, well, who cares? You're a grown man. You have to act like one. And I said other, you know, delightful, charming comments at the time. And besides, I told him in a not very romantic way, this is going to save on rent.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad I wasn't coaching you at that time.
No, I know. Can you imagine?
That's what you talk about, I'm sure. So after basically long-arming him and insulting him to move in with you, were you guys at least engaged at this point?
Oh, no. No, I didn't think I wanted to get married. So, you know, I was still thinking that that was the way I was going to avoid being divorced, was just, you know, just don't get married. I just wanted to play house.
So, you know, weren't you, you know, I'm just thinking, weren't you taking an enormous risk that, you know, if he ended up not wanting to get married or, not wanting to marry you or stay in an exclusive relationship, then not only would your relationship end, but then you'd also have to, you know, go through finding a house and, you know, picking up your life because you're, you know, you just moved in together.
I really was taking enormous risk. I had no idea how big of a risk I was taking because it didn't occur to me that if we broke up now, I would not only be heartbroken, but also would not have my great apartment with my roommate who knew that thank you cards are not wimpy. You know, it was like I went to Vegas and put my entire life on black, you know, on the roulette wheel. My heart, my home, my finances, everything was at risk. But, you know, women with lifelong romance, they tend to put their safety first. And that's habit number 7. And that includes not risking having to split up their pets and their furniture and find a new home when there's not a lifelong commitment. You know, I've talked to many, many women who have done this, have moved in and had a breakup, and they say they'll never do it again. It's really a common practice in our society. You know, you see it a lot, but, you know, a lot of people eat at McDonald's, too, and that doesn't make it a healthy choice.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great point. So, you know, we keep talking about lifelong romances, and I'm just wondering, how romantic did it feel moving in, because you got what you wanted, you're moving in, but, you know, how romantic was it under these circumstances?
Oh, it was about as romantic as, you know, going to a multi-level marketing meeting, I would say, you know, it just really wasn't. But, you know, if you think that's bad, now we're to the very embarrassing story of how John and I got engaged.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no, it's bad. Okay, so once we've been living together for a few months, I said, if we get married, we can be on each other's insurance policies. So he agreed. He said, okay, that sounds good. You know, he decided, you know, we both decided that we were going to tell our families that we were engaged, and I didn't have a ring. And when my sister-in-law asked me how he asked me to marry him, I realized, wow, you know, I completely cheated myself.
Yeah, you know, it just sounds like you were really – like, to me, listening, it sounds like you were in control mode. Like, you were going to control how every part of this relationship was going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In a way, I'm surprised he even agreed to this, you know. But I think by that point, he was already in love. And, you know, what's great about guys is that once they decide you're the one, you can pretty much get away with murder. That's what I've noticed.
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking as you were saying that, you know, that John really was a great guy, and he really was in love with you, because even though things were probably not going the way he'd wanted them to, I get a sense that really all he wanted to do was to make you happy. And, yeah. you know, I even think that, you know, you mentioned you didn't want to get married. So he probably wasn't even asking you to get married so that he wouldn't make you unhappy.
Yeah, it's true.
So looking back and knowing what you know now, you know, how would you have liked this to have turned out differently? You know, the engagement part.
Well, I sure wish I had a story of how he had, you know, surprised me, picked a romantic place, how he popped the question. You know, I ruined that. I ruined it because it was more important to me to feel in control than it was to have the romance. But women with lifelong romance routinely pick the intimacy and the romance over the control, even if that's scary to do.
That's great. So... you know, well, you didn't know at this time, right? You didn't know that women choose intimacy. So if you had known it, do you think you would have done it?
You know, I really don't know if I was capable at the time. I was pretty terrified all the time back then. And my best thinking was to try to control every situation so I wouldn't have to, I don't know, so I wouldn't have to suffer unnecessarily. You know, I was doing the best I could, but my decisions weren't very good for the intimacy, you know. I mean, for instance, I remember noticing that he liked the Three Stooges, and he still does. He loves the Three Stooges. If you just mention the word Three Stooges, my husband starts to laugh. So, and I felt that I had to watch them if he wanted to watch them. So, and I hate the Three Stooges. So I told him, hey, the Three Stooges are stupid because that's my opinion. And I thought, well, my opinion counts. And I thought this was somehow going to change his preference for the Three Stooges, but it didn't. He's completely committed to the Three Stooges. I also noticed other things. Like I thought that he was drinking too much soda. So I told him, you know, that's bad for you and you shouldn't do that. I noticed that he wasn't dressing as well as I thought he should. So I told him how to dress.
Well, you know, some people might say that you were, you know, just, you know, being honest, sharing your opinion or trying to be helpful.
That's exactly what I told myself, Gladys. But, you know, helpful in wife language means critical in husband language. And when people feel criticized, they withdraw. And that's exactly what John did. And then I was really lonely, so lonely.
You know, Laura, that thing that you just said about, you know, helpful in wife language being critical in husband language, can you elaborate on that? Because I really think it's such an important point. You know, people confuse honesty with criticism and feel that you should be able to speak, you know, whatever's on your mind or say anything that's on your mind if you're in a relationship. And I really doubt that you would have done something, honestly doubt that you would have done something to hurt John intentionally. So, you said you thought you were just being honest and, you know, how...
I had no idea that what I was calling being honest was actually just being critical, which is not the same as liberation, like I was telling myself, right? This whole thing about my opinion counts, just because I'm a woman doesn't mean that my opinion doesn't count and I got to speak up for myself. And, you know, women with lifelong romances, they tend to treat their men very respectfully, not just husbands either. It's interesting, you know, they treat, you know, husbands and boyfriends, of course, but there's also their fathers, their brothers, and their sons. They tend to respect men in general. They respect the things that men bring to the party. And that's habit number 9. And this is one of the reasons that I'm really looking forward to the retreat. You know, it took me such a long time to develop that respect on my own. I kept trying and kept failing and just ended up struggling much longer than I needed to. And now, when women get together in groups and do this work, they're able to gain this habit very quickly. And as soon as they do, they notice a tremendous improvement in their relationships. I have women tell me that they feel like they have a new husband, like after just a couple of weeks. But, of course, she's the one who changed. So in June, when we have the retreat weekend in Miami, I feel like it's the retreat I wish I had gone to when I was just starting out with John. I mean, it's exciting to think about everyone spending just a few days and walking away with all these great habits. And that's what happens when you get the support. It's so magical. You trade one weekend for habits that serve you for a lifetime.
Oh, my gosh. I think that should be our slogan. You trade one weekend for habits that serve you for a lifetime. That's it. I mean, honestly, and I know we're going to go much more into depth. For those of you who are listening, we're going to go much more into depth into how to begin developing these habits, because right now you're learning, you know, you're learning what the habits are. And we're going to go into it much more in depth at the retreat. But before we move on, Laura, if it's okay with you, I'd like to review the habits for the people who are taking notes. Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds great.
So I have number one is attracting rather than pursuing. Number two, being receptive. Three, letting him set the pace. Four, seeing the good qualities in a man. Five, reserving sex for exclusivity. Excuse me. Six, letting the relationship happen naturally. Seven, putting your safety first and moving in only after you're in a committed relationship. Eight was choosing intimacy over control. And nine was being respectful of men by not criticizing them. So before we go back to your story, I do want to say we do have a couple of questions coming in via email. If any of you joined late, the email address to send the questions to is glad1@live.com. That's glad, G-L-A-D, the number one, at L-I-V-E.com. Okay, so let's get back to your story because it really is awesome. And so you were sharing that you were criticizing John, and you were telling him all these things, you know, what was stupid, what he should wear, what he should eat, what he should drink. And, you know, I hear this a lot. I'm sure you hear it a lot in the coaching practice, you know, the complaints. So did you really think that John was going to somehow be inspired to change because you were constantly criticizing him and telling him, you know, what he should do?
That is not a fair question. But, you know what? At the time, I didn't even acknowledge it as criticism. I thought I was just being honest. But, you know, to answer it, I guess I have to say yes. I thought I was going to change him. And I thought that he had to change because he was doing all these things that I thought were pretty embarrassing. You know, I was, like, feeling ashamed of him. Like, he watched a lot of TV. You know, he was messy. He didn't order right when we went out to eat. So I'd try to make up for him by explaining to the waitress what he was trying to say. You know, I turned off the TV when I thought he'd had enough. I told him which chores were his and which ones were mine, and I explained to him how it was even Steven this way, you know. I wrote them down for him. I recorded our outbound message on the home answering machine because, you know, I thought he wouldn't do it right, you know. I try not to let other people see what he was really like so it wouldn't reflect poorly on me.
Wow, you know, Laura, that's such an interesting point. Like, you actually, you thought that other people were judging you for his actions and his behaviors.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I still catch myself thinking that, you know. But now I know that women with lifelong romance are really focused on themselves and on their own self-improvement the most. And the more I focus on myself, on my self-care, on my dreams, on my pleasure, the better the relationship is. And the more I see him as this incredible man that I somehow managed to get and keep, even though I was so disrespectful for so many years. And that's habit number 10, which is focusing on yourself, looking at your side of the street. So anytime you're looking at how he is or what he should do differently, you're wasting your time and energy.
Oh, that's their opposite point, you know. And I'm thinking about John, you know, how you said how you managed to keep him. And, you know, it seemed like he was pretty much going with the flow at the beginning of the relationship, you know. But I'm curious to know what started to happen as a result of, you know, this constant criticism and the disrespect toward him.
Yeah, well, I really noticed that he was distant. You know, he never left. I don't think he ever gave up trying to make me happy, but he was watching more TV. You know, not less. And I was unhappy. I decided that we needed to talk more to be closer. So, you know, I just went and I told him that we needed to talk about our relationship.
Oh, my God. You actually said we need to talk about our relationship?
Yes, I actually said that.
I'm surprised he didn't leave skid marks in the driveway just trying to get away from
me. Yeah, exactly, Gladys. you know. I waited until we were in bed, I think, to say this usually, nearly asleep, to bring this up. And it's like Phyllis Diller says, never go to bed angry. Stay up and fight, you know. I think that was my motto back then. I really believe that if we talked it out, I would feel some relief. I'd feel more connected. But it just never worked out that way. Now, you know, now I know that women with lifelong romance don't ever say, we need to talk about the relationship. They just say how they feel. They say what they want. And men just want us to be happy. So they listen to that. And if they see an opportunity to please us, they take it. So habit, this next habit is focusing on how you feel and what you want and expressing that cleanly and clearly.
That's great. You know, the last, I'm seeing a pattern. The last two habits are really habits 10 and 11 have us focusing on ourselves, you know, what we can do to improve and change our relationships, and then focusing on what we want, what we feel, and then just saying that. So are you, you know, a question I get a lot in the workshops is, so are you saying that if you say what you want, then your husband's just going to do it?
Well, I think Mick Jagger said it best, right? You can't always get what you want. But, you know, a man who feels respected will go a long way to please the woman he loves. I discovered this after I finally started to learn some discretion about not saying whatever came to mind.
Well, how did you do that? What did that look like in your relationship?
Well, I just made a decision to stop criticizing him, no matter how much it seemed like he screwed up. You know, I remember he once polished his black shoes and walked across my new cream-colored area rug and got it dirty. And he apologized right away. And I expressed my disappointment. You know, I remember saying, oh, I'm so bummed. It's stained. Oh, no. You know, I hope it comes out. But I didn't tell him to be more careful. Or I didn't tell him, you know, take off your shoes in the house next time.
Why not? Why didn't you say that if that's what, you know, maybe popped into your head?
Well, it's very tempting, you know, to say something critical. But today, I find it's just not worth the price of admission. I mean, when I stopped criticizing him, that really changed how my husband responded to me. You know, he felt guilty about the rug, but not attacked by me. And when he didn't feel attacked, he could show up to be with me, as just as himself, which is, you know, that humble, funny guy that I fell in love with. That's who he is. I really like that guy. And that guy wants to show me a good time and lighten my load, and he wants to see me smile. So I just stuck with how I felt and resisted the urge to say anything critical or disrespectful to him. You know, I had a stained rug already. That happens. One problem I didn't have was tension in my marriage. You know, that seemed like a monumental effort for me back then, and it was. But it was worth it to restore the intimacy.
You know, it sounds like you have come a long way from, you know, from being the woman who had to control every aspect of the relationship and make sure everything was perfect, you know, even a rug. And so, you know, I'm sitting here, I just really love how your story shows that transformation from struggle and distance to romance, you know, romance and intimacy. And I really would love for you to share with us how, what it's like between you and John now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, every day we have hand-holding. We play together. We laugh. We sing. We dance. We chase each other around the house. You know, we look forward to seeing each other again. In every moment, you know, I can choose control or I can choose intimacy. And today, I mostly, but not always, but mostly I choose the intimacy because that's my habit. That's where we live now.
And that's really beautiful after 22 years, Laura, you know, to just hear that. And, you know, that's why we're having the conference, right? Because you and I and women who have done this work, we're not the only lucky ones. We're not the ones who are lucky enough, you know, to get to experience this type of relationship. You know, I think, in fact, you know, luck has very little to do with it.
It's not about luck at all. It's about having the skills that you need to nurture an intimate relationship. If you're not feeling cherished right now, then I want you to get these skills as soon as possible. I want every woman on this call to have a guy who makes her crazy happy. You know, maybe you have him already, but he's not showing up the way you want him to. Or you're single and you just can't believe there's a guy out there who's like this, what we're describing. And I, honestly, I just can't wait to show you a few tools that are going to change things for you forever. And if you're thinking of registering for the retreat but you haven't done it yet, you can still get the early bird special through the end of this month, and it's a terrific deal if you get that price. It's more than half off. Or if you can find a friend who also wants to attend, or maybe I should say a friend that you think needs to attend, right? Because once we stop controlling our husbands, that doesn't mean we can't control our friends, right, Gladys? So, okay, then you can really get a good deal on the friends package. We're focused on giving single women the tools they need to attract the guy who's right for them, and on giving wives the tools that they need to transform their relationships into magical romances. So to thank you for coming to this teleconference tonight, and to encourage you to sign up now, I'm also going to throw in a few extras for those of you who enroll by Friday at midnight. So if you sign up for the retreat by then, you will not only get to go to the retreat, but you will also get some extras like free 30-minute coaching call with a certified coach, which is normally $95. And I'll also give you the audio collection, How to Have an Intimate, Passionate, Peaceful Marriage, as a bonus. And all of this is included with the early bird price. Now, the retreat is $750 after this month, but you will get these two bonuses and get to enjoy 3 days of relaxation, fun, and transformation in Miami for only $395 if you register solo, or if you get a friend to go with you, it's only $695 or less than $349 each. And we'll give you two free coaching calls if you register with a friend, and you'll get two free audio collections when you sign up by Friday. Gladys, am I leaving anything out? I know we have some questions we need to get to.
Yeah, actually, I have quite a few questions, and so we'll talk about that in a minute. But I do want to remind people how you can learn more about the retreat and register and take advantage of these early bird specials is to www.lauradoyle.org. And click on the tab that is for the Lifelong Mastery Weekend, and you'll get all the information that you need there. Also, I want to remind you that if you're interested in becoming a certified surrender wife or surrender single trainer, remember that we will be really revealing that the new certification program, brand new, out of the package at this conference, and letting you know how you can become a trainer and share the keys to the lifelong romance with women in your families, your communities, your places of worship. And finally, if you're someone who would like to receive coaching, you've heard something on this call that's really resonated with you and you don't want to wait till June, you want to start now, you know, I really want to encourage you, you know, maybe you're single and you're looking to attract the man who's right for you, or you want to bring more romance and intimacy to your relationship, you know, please contact Laura or myself. You can email me again at glad1@live.com, so we can schedule a coaching session. You'll have the choice of either participating in a one-on-one coaching session or a small group coaching session with about four other people, and we'll give you all those details when you contact us. So, Laura, I think we're ready to take a few questions. I just want to say there are a lot of questions, so I won't commit you, but I will promise to answer as many of the questions as we can via email. We can answer them together if you want, but I just want you to know if you submitted a question, your question will be answered. If we don't get to it on the call, we'll definitely send you an email response, okay?
Absolutely.
I will. And Laura disagreed. So, so, again, that email address is glad1@live.com. And if we have time, but I don't know if we will, Laura, we can open the lines.
So, Gladys, okay. Let's go ahead and start with the questions you have.
Okay, so I have one here that says that she's a woman who is wondering if you've ever seen that a relationship can get better at all or in any way using all of these principles if your husband is an addict and not in recovery.
You know, that is a great question. That's a heartbreaking question. I've worked with many women in your situation, and I call this when you're married to a man who's actively addicted to either drugs, alcohol, or gambling, just those three, by the way. I'm not worried about food. I'm not worried about cigarettes. you know, other kinds of addictions. But those three addictions in particular, I call it a divorce I endorse, you know, for the safety of the woman, the safety of the wife. You know, she's just frankly not that safe in that situation, because a person in the grips of an addiction like that will always serve that addiction before he serves his wife, before he can be really showing up for her as a good husband. So, of course, you always hope that that situation will change, but it's not one that we can count on. So here's what you can do. If it's your decision to stay in that marriage, and I certainly respect that, despite his addiction, then, of course, you can practice many of the portions of surrendering. You can be respectful. You can express gratitude for your husband. But there are certain things I don't recommend. I don't recommend surrendering the finances to an active addict, I should say. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the things that you might consider doing, too, is as you are practicing these tools to the best of your ability, being respectful in that relationship so that you're keeping your side of the street as clean as you possibly can. And then there's an opportunity there to approach him and say, you know, I understand that it's important to you to drink or use or gamble or whatever it is, and I respect that, but it doesn't fit for me to stay in this relationship when that seems to be your first priority. So I need to go. And that's a very respectful way to end a marriage. And sometimes that can be an impetus, but not always, for a man to find recovery or sobriety. So unfortunately, you know, I wish I had a better answer for you on that one. That is why it's so important for the singles to be judging the character of the men they're dating. And early on, a man will tell you exactly who he is. If he's telling you that he drinks, you know, to the point of alcoholism, or if he uses illegal drugs, or if he's a compulsive gambler, they'll tell you those things. And that's one marriage I really want to keep you out of, because I've seen the end of the story. It ends in heartbreak, almost always ends in heartbreak, I'm really sorry to say. That's a great question. Thank you for asking that.
Absolutely. So here's one, and this person sent several questions, so I'll ask one and then we'll answer the others on email. It says, here's what I've been thinking about for a while since reading your book. I'm afraid that I will surrender and receive so much that I'll end up attracting men just because I'm lonely and receptive and not because we're really compatible in the long term, because I've done this several times in the past. So if I'm surrendering and receiving and being feminine around all kinds of pursuing men, how do I build relationships with one that is right for me instead of with all of them at once?
Well, I think it's fantastic, first of all. Let me just compliment you on your great connection with your feminine powers to attract and have men pursue you. Because, you know, sometimes I work with clients where that's a struggle to get back into that. They're so used to being at work and maybe taking on a kind of a tougher persona. So anyway, I think that's a wonderful thing that you've got going for you. And I do encourage you to date several men at once, because I like you to have a feeling of inner strength about how desirable you are, and also to be able to compare and decide which one you like the best. And that's the thing, you know, that's the part. The guy that's right for you is not just any guy. This is a guy who excites you. He thrills you, just like John thrilled me, just like Gladys's husband Rick thrilled her and continues to do so. And it's not that you won't know when you meet him. You will. You'll absolutely know. And, you know, sometimes I'll have clients call and say, well, he was really nice. He was very gentlemanly. You know, he opened the door and, you know, he, you know, told a few jokes or whatever. He tried to make me laugh, but, you know, I just was bored. And I say, well, don't go out with him again, because he's not your guy. So you absolutely have to wait until you meet the one that makes you weak in the knees, the one that really excites you. And it's not so hard to do. It's a matter of patience and just discernment. That's part of why we stay quiet on dates, is so we can be discerning, really focusing on ourselves. How do I feel? What do I want? Do I feel good around this man? You know, does he make me feel better than I felt with the guy that I was out with last night, for instance, right? And those are the important questions to be asking yourself all the time. All right. Dina, are you there? Okay, I can't hear
you. Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Good.
And we got rid of the noise. Fantastic.
Okay, great.
Okay, so Dina, go ahead. You were telling us.
Thank you. Yes, I was starting to say before that I had no idea that I was controlling until I read your book that a friend recommended to me, and I saw myself on every page. And, you know, since then, my marriage turned out. I was so miserable all the time. And I just wanted to say that just an example of the power of surrendering. I'm a cookbook author, and just a couple of weeks ago, I was in my deadline week. My deadline was on Friday, and I had about 15 recipes to test. It was Monday morning, and I had three or four recipes planned for that day that all required wine for the recipe testing, and I couldn't get that dang cork out of the bottle. I called my husband in a blind panic, and I just said, I can't get the cork out of the bottle. And I didn't say anything more than that. I didn't tell him what to do. I didn't tell him what I wanted to happen. He just came home. He drove a half hour home from work, uncorked that bottle and all the other bottles that I needed for recipe testing, and drove right back to work after that. And that's not something that I think would have happened 5 years ago when I was in the throes of being an absolute shrew.
Well, great story. And let me ask
you,
how did he feel? So you thanked him up and down for this, I'm guessing.
Of course.
For helping you out. And,
yeah.
And how did he seem to you after he had come home and done that for you and you thanked him?
You know, I think he just took it all in stride. Like, it was kind of like in his mind, like a normal thing for him to be doing at this point.
Like just doing my job, ma'am, that kind of attitude?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very sweet. I mean, I sometimes will notice that when John has made me especially happy, he just looks really proud, you know, and I kind of get a kick out of seeing him look proud now too. So I didn't know if maybe you caught that on your husband's face as well.
Yeah, no, he was much more matter of fact about that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is a great story, Dina. I so appreciate you coming
thank
in and
you.
Hanging out through the technical difficulties. So thank you so much for
sharing.
Well,
I owe
story.
You a huge debt of gratitude for saving my marriage.
Well, I'm glad to have you as my soul sister. It sounds like we're cut from the same cloth.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dina. All right. Well, it's just been such a pleasure. It's I never stop getting excited about seeing women get these tools and applying them and then sharing stories like Dina's. And I get, you know, I get a lot of great stories, and I treasure every single one. So for those of you who are listening right now and you have stories about the transformation in your relationship or in your life or the man that you attracted, you know, I get wedding pictures and I just eat it up. So I really appreciate that it's so encouraging to me. And I also want to thank all of you for taking an hour out of your lives tonight to be on the phone with us. And I look forward to meeting you at the Lifelong Romance Retreat in June. So until we talk again, do take good care of you. And we are going to stay on now and answer a couple more questions. So for those of you who have to go, good night.